Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
We're so glad that you've come out to meet Rory Friedman and her wonderful, wonderful new book. She first got started with the writing with her friend. They became friends in all around food. And then as they decided to sort of eat better, they learned a whole lot about the vegan things. And we have the folks from VegFestColorado.org over here that brought some lovely treats for us to support Rory. And her book tonight is focusing in even more on the animal factor. Let's welcome her and hear about this good book. And
thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Pat, and everybody here at Tattered Cover. And really, so much thanks goes to Vegan Life Colorado for promoting the event and to Anne for bringing lots of yummy sweet treats over there to share. Thank you. What do I want to say? I've been not preparing talks lately. I just feel like it's better to be alive and in the moment, which sometimes means it's like kind of messy and choppy. But I'd rather be messy and choppy and present than polished and prepared. So you're going to get messy and choppy. I don't know what's going to come out now, but I'm kind of mad that Pat just talked about my dogs because I want to talk about them. I'm going to show you pictures because I'm a mom and you're all stuck here now and this is what moms do. Okay, so this is Timber. Look at how handsome he is. He's also my boyfriend, which I know might sound weird, but it's true. We're dating and I'm his mother. I tried to make him my boyfriend on Facebook and put like, it's complicated, but because he didn't have his own Facebook page, it didn't let me. This is Timber's sister, Joey. She's like bedroom eyes, like dreamy seductress. And she does like this thing with eye contact. Like, you know how most animals and dogs especially don't really make a lot of eye contact? Joey does. She's like could win staring contests. It's like creepy, but special. And then this little ridiculousness over here, I mean, she's ridiculous, is Lucy. She's the one that Pat was saying does parkour. She's like scared of the world. If I brought her here with me right now, she'd be like, you would all think that I had given her a sedative. She'd be really quiet. If you tried to like pick her up, she'd be like, ooh, what do you want? But like if we were home, she'd be running around furniture, jumping on things, but she's not good at parkour. She like misjudges stuff. So what will happen is she'll like jump. I have like a couch that's like yay high, and she'll try to like jump really fast and jump on the couch, and she'll misjudge how high the couch is, and she'll just literally run and jump and bonk herself on the side of the couch and then just fall back and then just keep running, and she doesn't care. So it's funny that she's so scared of the world, but she has no fear of bodily harm. I just find that very interesting. So animals, I mean, I love animals. Who's an animal lover here? Is there anybody, I guess, and I'm not trying to embarrass you, but I'm just curious, is there anyone here who's not an animal lover? She pointed to her husband, yeah. And he said quietly, well, you're a good man for coming with your wife. I think, you know, most people are animal lovers, and it's okay that you're not. I wrote this book because I'm an animal lover, and I wrote Skinny Bitch and all the books in that series because I'm an animal lover. And who's read Skinny Bitch here? Okay, so most of you know Skinny Bitch talks about veganism and why animals suffer greatly when we eat them. So the book is called Skinny Bitch because I don't want to tell people animals suffer when we eat them. Buy this book because nobody wants to read about that stuff. So my intention with Skinny Bitch was to make some slick packaging and to manipulate and trick people into reading about factory farms and slaughterhouses. And I'm grateful that tactic seemed to have been, what's that word I want? Effective. And that it worked. And I don't know, there's Skinny Bitch in the series has about 3 million copies in print. So it did its job. Thank you. So I was grateful for that. And then Skinny Bitch came and it did its thing and it's still out there and it's still being bought and it's still being talked about. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking like, okay, more. Like we all know, those of us who are animal rights activists, like we need to do more. It's never enough because animals are still being tortured and slaughtered on a daily basis over and over again all day long. And it's up to us, the people who know and who care, to do something about it. And my idea for this book was that there's a lot of people out there who love cats and who love dogs and will do anything for the cats and dogs they live with, myself included. I'm like a complete slave to my three bossy dogs. And they call themselves animal lovers, but there's this enormous disconnect between the animal lover that they think they are and the way that they're actually behaving and living and moving around in the world. And I lived with the same disconnect myself for, you know, the first 19 years of my life. I just had no idea some of the things that I was contributing to by just existing a very normal everyday life. And when I learned about these things, I made a lot of changes. And I was 19 years old when the first shift happened to me, and that was the one about eating animals. I was in college at the University of Maryland, and I got a magazine in the mail from PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and there was an article about factory farming and slaughterhouses. So in that moment, reading that magazine, seeing those pictures, learning what happens to animals in factory farms and slaughterhouses, I knew that I could never eat animals again, that as an animal lover, I had just had no idea that this is what was happening to cows and chickens and pigs in order for me to eat them. So I went vegetarian in that moment. And then throughout the years that followed, I learned more and more about what happens to other animals and other arenas of life that just wasn't known to me before. And it really changed who I am and who I was. And this book, I'm happy to say, you know, after Skinny Bitch, I was getting thousands of emails from all over the world, people who were saying, I didn't know, and now I know, and I've changed my diet. And my thought was like, okay, but are they going to now find out about all the other stuff? And so my hope was that they, the readers of Skinny Bitch and Skinny Bastard, would also now learn about the other things that animals are enduring and the many ways that we can make a difference for these animals. And some of the ways are challenging and they'll ask a lot of you. And other things are really easy and simple and things that are kind of exciting and fun. And I'll just share, you know, as a dog mom, one of the things that I've gotten into the habit of doing in the last couple of years, I live in LA, so traffic is abysmal and you spend a lot of time in your car. And I like to get a lot of my phone calls done in the car, multitasking. So what happens is when I get home and I'm pulling in my driveway, I tell whoever I'm talking to, I'm so sorry, but I'd like to get off the phone with you now because I'm pulling in my driveway and I want to be present for my dogs when I walk in the door. So that's just, I think, a small, easy thing that we can all be more conscious of just really being present for our animals. Or when you take your dog for a walk, not being on your phone the whole time and just kind of like dragging your dog along while you're, you know, like checking your phone. I would do a better job of miming this if I wasn't holding a microphone. That's what happens when we walk our dogs and we're on our phones. And it's like they get three walks a day. Sometimes they don't even get that many. Can we not allow those three walks a day to just really be about them and to really be present with them and present with like, what is it that they're enjoying, and to like cheer them on that they're enjoying some smell, ask them how they're liking it, like get their bodies wagging. Like it's a treat. It's fun. And you know, it's easy to sometimes think of our dogs as like props in our lives that like live around us, but like they've got their whole own life happening too. And I think honoring that and honoring who they are and like the beingness of who they are is fun. Like when I'm really present with my dogs, I'm having so much more fun than when I'm acting as if they're like, oh, I have to take these dogs out, or like, oh, that's raining in LA and they're muddy. But like when I'm like, give me those muddy bodies, give me that muddy tail, I'll pull that tail. Like it's so much more fun. Like they're so fun. Yeah, sometimes I have a bad attitude. Sometimes being a dog mom's hard. I talk specifically in this book, I tell a lot of personal anecdotes about being a dog mom and what it was like raising Timber and Joey, the labs. They're 12 now. When I first got them, people would be like, oh, they're puppies, they're labs. Like, just so you know, first 2 years is rough. These guys were so wild until they were about six. They ruined my life. For a good six solid years, they ruined a queen-size bed, box spring, and mattress. They chewed walls. They chewed floors. One time their dad and I were at a wedding in D.C., one of my dear friends' wedding, and we brought the dogs and we left them in the hotel while we were gone, and we like gave them all sorts of bones and things as like a reward for us leaving them. And, you know, we were like at the hotel the whole time wondering how they were, making jokes with each other, like, did you get Joey's text? She wants us to come home now. Timber wants us to stop and bring him Burger King. Like, we're so conscious of our dog's needs and happiness. So we like get home, we're all like excited that we like came home early for them, we love them, and we open the door and inside the hotel room is like yellow confetti everywhere. They took not one yellow pages, two entire yellow pages, and shredded them into complete confetti. So yeah, they were wild. I also talk about the story where Timber is an eating disorder. And if you have a yellow Labrador Retriever, you probably also know that your dog has an eating disorder. Timber thinks about food, dreams about food, steals food. Like he's a beast. He's a wild beast around food. And this is what happened once during Thanksgiving. Reggie is the dog's dad name, but it's not really his name. It's a pseudonym I gave him in the book because that was his first dog's name. So Reggie, my ex-boyfriend and I, who adopted these dogs together, we were in whatever state we were in for Thanksgiving with his humongous family. And one of his cousins was like fully 9 months pregnant and like overdue, probably ready to go into labor any day now. She had stayed up all night long before Thanksgiving making this apple pie using this lattice making tool that a relative of theirs had smuggled out of some war-torn country like a century ago. Timber, that's all I can say. Timber got to the pie, and this poor like 9 month pregnant woman wept when she saw the remnants of the pie. I know, my dogs are evil. Timber's still a little evil. They're all a little bit evil, actually. Lucy, I like to call, like, you see Lucy, look how sweet Lucy is. Look at her. She's absurd. But I like to call her Lucifer. That's one of her nicknames. She's not evil, but she's bossy. Don't be fooled by that little Muppet face. She's bossy. Lucy was my third late in life baby. Was not. I mean, two dogs is plenty. Two Labradors is plenty. I did not want a third dog. I wasn't trying to have a third dog. Reggie and I broke up. And we decided that we were going to share custody of our dogs. So Reggie and his wife live in Northern California, and I live in L.A. So it's like probably, I don't know, 10 hours or something from where we each live to each other. So every 6 months, we swap the dogs. So some of you may be like, oh, my God, I would die without my dogs for 6 months. I'm like, woo, I'm free for 6 months. Like, I don't have to worry about my dogs. They're with their dad and their other mom. They're happy. They're being loved. I'm like, somebody else feeds them in the same neurotic manner that I do and gives them all healthy, crazy food. They're in good shape. Did I want a third dog disturbing my 6 months out of the year freedom card? Not in the least. And then that little Muppet pie showed up. And here's how that went. And I talk about this in Beg also. My friend Jane Garrison is an amazing animal rights activist in California. And in addition to the 5 million other things she does for animals, she goes to shelters and pulls about 10 dogs at a time from open admission shelters, which means that if these dogs are not adopted, they're going to be euthanized. So what Jane does is pull 10 dogs at a time and then finds either foster homes or forever homes. And she just literally, I can't even figure out how many dogs she's rescued in her many years of doing this. So Timber and Joey were with their dad and their other mom. I was living it up as a free woman, and I was actually just about to go to Peru for like a 6 week trip and was like very excited about, or for a month long trip. I was going to backpack through Peru, and Jane sends an email out like, hey guys, I'm in a pinch. You know, I placed 8 of the 10 dogs, but 2 of them had kennel cough, so they can't go with the other 8. Can somebody step up and just foster, you know, one of these dogs or 2 of these dogs? Because Mark and I are leaving, her husband and she are leaving town and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, sure. My big dogs are away. Like, a little one little dog will be so easy. Like, it'll be fun. I'm missing my dogs. It'll be fun. So she shows up with this little thing, except this little thing was called Rose. And she was like shaved from the shelter. They had shaved her because she was covered in flea bites, and her ears were covered in flea bites, and her tail was completely just scabbed over with flea bites. I could see she was missing one tooth. I later learned she was missing more than one tooth. Like, just a cute little tiny little snaggle, like pink and white little piglet. And I really believed, like, I will foster this person and we will maintain a safe distance. Like, I'll be a nice foster mom. Like, I'll be loving and kind, but like, we're going to keep a safe emotional distance from each other. And I like did it. I thought I was doing it. And like 1 week went by and it was like, oh, she's so sweet. And people would be like, you should keep her. You got no, 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 no. And then I'd be like, I have two dogs ready to share custody of them with my ex. Blah, blah, blah. And I'd go through the whole thing. And Jane would call on like a daily basis and be like, how's Rose doing? And I'd be like, she's great. She's so sweet. Look, she's getting better. She did this today or she did that today. Like, you know, she did pee on the dining room table, but she's still learning. She literally peed on the dining room table. And every time Jane would be like, wow, she's really attached to you. And I was like, Jane, we're not doing this. It's not happening. Like, I know that you're a professional, like, dog placer, but you're not going to do it to me. Like, it's a very nice try, but I've got two dogs. I'm not getting another one. Like, my dogs don't even really like other dogs. Like, you can't even walk three dogs at the same time. Like, it's just not possible. But it's sweet of you to try, but you're cute. It's not happening. Yeah. We know how that story ends. The reason her name is Lucy... this is perfect. So I was walking her one day and I was thinking, gosh, whoever gets her is going to be so lucky to have her. She's so sweet. Like Timber and Joey would drag me around like sled dogs. And the little sweet Lucy's like, you know, 15 pounds. And she like she's dumb and she'd be like, whoa, car, whoa, sidewalk, whoa, stairs, like, whoa, a mirror. She'd never been outside before. I don't know what her life was like before I got her, but she literally had never been outside before, it seems like. So she was really easy to walk compared to my 90 and 70 pound labs. And so I was like, oh, she's so sweet and easy. Whoever gets her is going to be so lucky. She's going to be the light of their lives. La Luz, the light. Lucy. I'm going to name her Lucy because she didn't respond to Rose at all. So, and I also thought like, and some LA glamour puss who wants like a little white foofy purse dog is going to love the name Lucy. I would never want the name Lucy for my dog. That's so not my style. But I'm going to do that because somebody's going to want some little white idiot named Lucy. Guess who is the idiot walking around? I'm kind of like embarrassed by her because she's like she's a little white small purse dog. So whenever I'm like out with her for 6 months out of the year and people are like, your dog's so cute. I'm like, I have two big dogs too. Like, I think people are going to judge me and think that I'm, like, this girl that has... And I'm sorry if any of you have little white purse dogs. Like, it's fine for other people. It's just not my gig. So I have two big labs also, and we go hiking, and I drive a Toyota 4Runner. And it's used, and it's beat up, and I'm not that girl. But, yeah, I talk all about those stories and more, and then I do talk about the big picture. And I start with the animals we live with, you know, cats and dogs, and I talk about my cat, who I had in college. His name was Binger. I was a pothead in college. You can figure that out yourself. I talk about the time Binger went missing and what that meant because he was declawed. And I talk about declawing cats and what that actual surgery is like for these animals. And then I talk about the bigger picture, not just the animals we live with, not just our dogs and cats, but I also talk about the animals that we're wearing, what happens to animals who we use for leather. What happens to the animals in labs that we're buying products that they've been tested on? What happens to the animals that we eat without really doing the math that like a cow, chicken, or pig is actually the meat on our plates? I talk about rodeos and zoos and circuses and what happens to the animals that we use for entertainment. So this is a really big picture, a broad picture. Quite frankly, I'm a little tired of talking about animals. I'm an animal lover, but I have other interests too. And my desire was like, you know what? I'm so sick of this topic. I'm going to put it all in one book and then be done with it. Like, this is everything. This is A to Z. And it was hard making it a small book with A to Z, but I really feel like it's an A to Z. It's got everything you need to know about animals and how to be a better animal lover. So it's with great joy that I am presenting this to the world. And one of the other things that I'm really proud of and happy about with this book. So if you'll see, the title is Beg. It's there's no profanity in the title like there were in my other books. And there's no profanity inside this book either. Rory Friedman has stopped swearing, everybody. Alert the press. I'm from New Jersey. Both my parents are New Yorkers. I was born and raised into a dynasty of swearing. And I was doing it my whole life, and I was really good at it. And I had a spiritual experience. I don't even know when it was. It was last year, just before this book was going off to my publisher, for like the final print or the final proof. And I called my, I was in Mount Shasta with my spiritual community, and I had this meditation, and it became clear to me during this meditation that I no longer wished to swear in my life or in my writing. And I called my agent like, I'm so sorry, you're going to kill me, but I'm not cursing anymore. And I know that you've spent months negotiating this contract, and I know that we're like just about to go off to press here, but I don't want to do it. I can't do it. I don't care if they don't want to publish the book anymore. I don't care if we have to give the advance back. I'm not doing it. I'm not giving a book in that has a profane title and profane language. And if they want to cancel the contract, so be it. And I'm sorry. And she was cool about it. And she said, do you want to call the editor or do you want me to? And I said, you do it. But luckily, my editor handled the news great. And they said, you know, we think the book can stand up without that language. And I was like, it can? I thought you needed to curse to be interesting and funny. I didn't know. So yeah, I'm really happy to say that this book, I wouldn't say it won't offend people. I'm sure hunters will probably be offended when they read this book. And I'm sure that some moms who want to continue taking their kids to the circus will be offended when they read this book, or women who want to continue wearing mink coats will probably be offended. But no one's going to be offended by the language in the book, because there's zero profanity in here. So yeah, I'm happy to say that I think this book has a much wider reach than my previous books, because A, it's not a diet book, and B, there's no profanity. I feel like I'm bored with me. This is like my fifth or sixth stop on this book tour. I'm so tired of listening to myself, and I think I'd much rather hear what you guys have to say. If you have any questions or comments, one of the things I really appreciate about being part of the animal community is how smart everyone is and how keen everyone is and eager to help each other. So if there's something that you all want to know and I don't have the answer, I have no doubt that somebody in this room will be like, oh, you need to go on this website, or oh, this company makes a great blah blah blah. And while I'm saying that, I will say that happycow.net is one of my favorite go-to websites for finding food when you're traveling. I didn't go on Happy Cow this time around only because my friend Peter had emailed me about two restaurants, Watercourse and Sitio City. So I've spent, like, in 24 hours, I spent about $100 at Sitio City. And I've got food waiting for me in my hotel room when I go back. But really and truly, I thank you all so much for being here, for coming out tonight. I thank you for whatever you can do to help promote BEG. I need help promoting this book. This book has an important message, and I really, it's my truest desire that people will read the book, get the information, and have their hearts and minds changed, and that they'll change their lives as a result. So anything you can do to help spread the word, chances are, like, if you're a member of Vegan Life Colorado, like, you don't need to read this. You're already well on board. Buy a copy for somebody else, or lend your copy to somebody else. Like, really, the people, I'm not here to preach to the choir, although I imagine you're pretty much the choir, except for our one non-animal lover. You're the only one I'm happy to see here. Thank you. The rest of you are a waste of space. yeah, if I really am thankful for any and all help in promoting this book, Facebook, Twitter, media, social media, blah, 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 other things that the kids are using nowadays. I don't know how to do Twitter on my phone. Yeah, I'm grateful. Thank you for being here, and thank you. Any questions, comments? Uh-huh. I do reveal what I feed my dogs in the book. I don't go into it, but I feed my dogs a mixture of, I'm a little crazy, dog food, kibble. It's delicious. Actually, I don't want to say it's delicious. It smells delicious. It smelled so good, I tasted one. And I'm not, actually, twice I tasted one kibble. It didn't taste as good as it smelled for humans, but my dogs seem to love it. So I give them a blend of that, and then this other stuff that I call green slop. It's made by Honest Kitchen, and I don't remember the brand or whatever that it is. Is this a secret note that I need to read now?
Just to repeat the question.
Oh, that's smart. She wants me to repeat the question for the audio. For the audio podcast, the question was, what do I feed my dogs? I feed my dogs dog food, green slop made by the Honest Kitchen. I think it's called Preference, and it's like alfalfa and a bunch of other super-duper healthy things that it's like granules and powder, and you mix water in, and it's healthy. And then I also add beans, and then like potatoes or quinoa or brown rice. So yeah, it's, don't be concerned if that sounds like, wow, I can never do that. That's okay. You can start small. feed your dogs V-Dog. That's a good, healthy kibble. Is there another question?
Mm-hmm. Explain the title.
The title, Beg. So somebody asked to explain the title. The title is Beg. I had another title that was Profane, and then I had that thing come up in a meditation about not wanting to use profanity. And in another meditation, you know, I'm an animal rights activist. I've been aware of what's been happening to animals for 19 years. This April was 19 years for me as a vegetarian and activist. And I thought, like, yeah, I know, and it's terrible what happens to animals, and, like, it's so sad, and it makes me so mad. But what I didn't realize and what was revealed to me during this meditation was, like, just how much grief was inside my body for what was happening to these animals. I just didn't know. I thought I had done a good job of, like, you know, I'll cry when I see a video and I'll get mad, or, you know, things like that would come up from time to time. But overall, I just thought, like, I'm dealing with it. But in this meditation, I was just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. I just felt like this bottomless pit of grief for what happens to the animals. And it surprised me. And there were people next to me. It's like a quiet meditation room. Like, it's dark. There's candles lit. It's like very sacred space. And I cannot, and there's other people crying quietly around the room sometimes, but I just could not stop crying. And I finally was like, I have just got to turn this off. This is like disturbing to the people next to me, that I am just like wailing. And then after the meditation is over, there's this experience where we all share something that we want to share with one another that had happened during the experience. And we're not meant to tell other people what they should do. We're supposed to just say, like, in this experience, I received information about blah, 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 or it came to me that I was really sad about animals and what happens to them. But all I could think of was, like, when I share with these people what it is that I'm feeling, like, I have to beg them to stop doing what it is they're doing. Like, I have to beg, like, what can I do? Like, this just desperation of, like, how can I help these animals? I am just gutted by what's happening. How can I help? I'm going to beg these people. And I did. And, you know, some people after were like, thank you. Other people were probably like, whoa. But, you know, I just shared, like, hey, sorry, all that crying. I just got in touch with how much pain I'm in about what's happening to animals. And I was saying all this sobbing afterwards, like, and I'm begging you to please, like, stop. Like, please help them. Please don't wear fur. Don't take your kids in there. Don't eat animals. And, yeah, that's where the title came from. Isn't that a fun, happy story? Yeah, it's really, this book is an honest and earnest plea on behalf of the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The question is, do I feel hopeful that we've reached a vegan tipping point where things can get turned around? I'm not sure if our numbers are necessarily reflecting that in the huge way that many of us would like to see, but I think we're absolutely seeing that it is happening. And I think as far as the media goes, you can't turn the TV on or turn on your computer or open a newspaper or magazine these days without seeing something about veganism, vegetarianism, animal cruelty, you know, all these terrible ag gag bills that are out now. There's a lot of backlash. I was on Jane Velez Mitchell on HLN, and she said, do you think this is causing a backlash? Yeah, I think this is backfiring on them, because here they are trying to pass these laws, and now what's happening? On every news station is video footage of exactly what it is they're trying to keep quiet and hidden under the rug. So I'm really hopeful. I'm not sure it's going to happen in our lifetime, but I do believe that at some point humanity is going to reach a different place in their relationship with animals. Do I believe the whole world will be vegan? No, but I am hopeful that factory farming will be abolished, and that we will live that humanity will exist in a different plane than it exists now in this relationship to animals and using them in such a humongous and commercial and disconnected way. But until that happens, we all need to keep doing our parts. So the question is, I mentioned what I feed my dogs, but what about my cats? My cat's dead. Thanks for asking. No, my cat died many, many years ago. I don't have a cat anymore. There are books on the topic about feeding animals and what to feed our pets, and that what I have learned and read is that it is healthy and safe for dogs to be vegans, but not so much for cats. So thankfully, I don't have that conundrum now. I think it would be challenging to have a cat. You know, when I've stayed in houses with friends who have cats and I've had to feed their cats, it's definitely kind of gross and creepy and sad, you know, like opening a can of something and knowing like, wow, there's like, you know, 10 ground up birds in this little can of food. My cat was not vegan when I had a cat. I do tell a story in the book about my cat, the declawing story, and it ends with me giving the cat CPR. And that's all I'll say about my cat. You'll have to read the rest to find out. Cliffhanger.
First of all, I want to defend myself.
This is the non-animal lover. Yeah. Fair enough.
Let's go on a philosophical level.
Okay.
Excuse me. Your attitude towards animals seems to be, okay, let them live and let them be happy. But there are animals that are inimical to human beings. I mean, for example, we spray against mosquitoes that carry diseases. We would shoot rabid dogs. There are other things that we do. You're not... There's a continuum of life. I don't know if you would have the same compassion for a beetle as you would have for a cow. So where do you begin drawing lines? I mean, how do you define what you're all about?
Got it. Wow, how am I going to repeat that for the podcast? The question is... Sometimes in life, we do things that are harmful to animals, like spraying for beetles, like shooting rabid dogs. You probably have less love in your heart for a beetle than you do for a cow. Where do you draw the line? And it's a good question, and I'm glad that you asked. And I don't so much talk about the philosophical realm in this book because it's so big and it could be a book in and of itself. What I can say is, where do we draw the line? You know, we might have to spray for mosquitoes so that we're not getting whatever diseases we are. Maybe not in America. That's not a good example. Great. I've blown the whole question. You know, a rabid dog, I don't know if a rabid dog can be treated or not, but where do I draw the line? I draw the line like, what can I do? I don't have to eat animals. I don't have to wear them. It's easy enough for me to live and be healthy and be well and dress myself without the use of cows, chickens, or pigs. There's so many other foods that I can eat that are healthy and that I can thrive on, so I can draw the line there. I just moved north of LA. Like, I don't live in the city of LA anymore. I still live in LA County, but I live in Topanga, and it's kind of like mountainy, and like I like to call myself a mountain woman now with my two big dogs. And I have a lot of bugs where I live, and I'm scared of bugs, and I don't like bugs, but I don't kill them. You know, I don't like it, but I will get a Tupperware and catch and release bugs from my house. And so, like, that's another place to draw the line. Like, I don't like them, and I don't want them touching me, and I'm terribly scared of them, and, like, this wasp with long legs keeps flying in and out of my house all the time, and it's like, just leave me alone, wasp, but it won't, and it keeps coming inside, and I'm spraying, like, natural, like, bug repellent, like, hippy-dippy essential oils around my door frame, hoping that this long-legged wasp will stop flying in, and it won't. But, like, I don't swat it with a rolled up magazine because I can catch it with a Tupperware and bring it outside. So I'd say, where do we draw the line? Like, doing what we can, doing what we can. And I think everybody's line is going to be somewhere different. You know, for some people, they're going to say, well, that's extreme. And my child is allergic to bees. And if he gets stung by a bee, he'll die. And I'm going to kill that bee as soon as I see it because I'm not taking the chance. Okay, that's where that person's going to draw the line. I can only answer for myself and say, I can usually do better than what my first instinct might tell me to do. My first instinct might be selfish or self-motivated, but then my mercy instinct kicks over, which I think is my true instinct, my real divine nature instinct, and I try to allow that to be the one. You know, I've been having an ant situation in my bathtub, so like I'm in a rush, I need to get in the shower, and then I pull the shower curtain back and there's just like 50 ants in my bathtub, and it's like my first thing is like, oh, I'm in a hurry, and like I could just turn the water on and all these ants would wash away and I wouldn't see them again and I could forget about them. But it's like, and then I go like, yeah, but I'd know that I just scalded and drowned 50 creatures, like, all because I needed to be on time to something. Like, I'm not okay with that. So I sit there with the Tupperware and a paper towel for half an hour and, like, catch and release 50 ants. And, like, I have to do it many days in a row, and I'm getting tired of it. But, like, mercy. I'd just so much rather live from a place of mercy and compassion than a place of, like, impatience or selfishness. So that's where I draw the line, but we all have to, and I'll agree, I'm enamored with animals, and I know that not everybody is, but I think that everybody has mercy. And, you know, you don't have to be a vegan or an animal rights activist to take a look at some of this video footage of what happens in slaughterhouses and factory farms around the world. It's not like, oh, we're just seeing the worst cases. No, we're just seeing what is really just commonplace in this industry and in these practices. And you don't have to be a vegan. You don't have to be an animal lover. You don't have to be an animal rights activist. Like, I think anybody with mercy and compassion will see these things and be justly horrified. Thank you for the question. Uh-huh. How do you stay positive and not judge the people around you who don't share your beliefs? Who says I do? Yeah. I'll say, because it's been 19 years for me, I've definitely been all over that spectrum. And for sure, and I was just talking about this with Beth, my sweet media escort on the way over here, it's hard sometimes. You know, when I first was writing this book and I'm like researching this section on bullfighting, and I'm writing about bullfighting, and I'm like, you know, swearing and angry and name calling and insulting and having a lot of dualistic language about like the who do these things to bulls. That was a bad word that I was just and then, you know, I had that spiritual shift around language and I had to take the cursing out, but I also just got to see how dualistic I can be sometimes with like wanting to get everybody on the side that I'm on. And it kind of comes at the expense of dividing people further, where if I'm inviting us all to be in our divine hearts and coming from a place of compassion and love, then we have to extend that to human beings too. It doesn't mean that we lay down and we let people do terrible and cruel things and that we just allow for it and say it's terrible, we need to love them. We absolutely need to fight for these animals. That said, I think we can be like, you know, like soldiers of love. And you know, I have to remember that constantly because sometimes, you know, right away, the hair on my neck will stand and I'll get bristly, you know, if I'm at a protest or a rally and somebody walks by and says, like, get a life. And like, oh, I'm standing out here volunteering my time for animals, like handing out leaflets on the corner. And somebody's telling me to get a life. And I want to be like, you know, like I have a life. And it's a really good life, but I'm choosing to be out here because I'm a kind person and because I'm trying to show other people what kindness might look like. But then I have to remember, as much as I want to choke that guy, that like he just doesn't know. And, you know, maybe 25 years ago or 20 years ago, I didn't know. And maybe even 5 years ago, even though I was kind to animals, I wasn't treating people the way I should. And I was being really offensive and antagonistic to people who weren't vegan or weren't on the exact same place on the path that I am. So the way I deal with it is just trying to remember continuously that I'm where I am on my path. Other people are on their own path and in different places. We're all doing the best we can. My way is not the only way or the right way. It's just what is working for me. And all I can do is share this information with other people, hope that it appeals to something in their heart, and see what happens from there and allow that their path is going to look however it's going to look and they're right where they're meant to be at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So, like, animal adoption is really important to me, and I'm trying to kind of figure out how to sway public opinion because we're euthanizing 3 or 4 million animals a year in our nation's shelters. So, what do you see as a way to kind of change that public mindset that they don't have to go to a breeder?
Right.
They can get a great animal from a shelter. Kind of that realm.
Got it. So, the question is, we are still euthanizing 3 to 4 million animals every year in the United States shelters alone. What can we do to sway public opinion about adopting versus purchasing? And it is something that I talk about for the first couple chapters in the book. And it was kind of startling to me. Like, didn't Oprah have a puppy mill episode like 5 years ago? Why are we still talking about this? Why is this still an issue? And at one point when I was writing the book and I found out this statistic, I was literally like, oh my God, there's no point in me writing this book. This whole thing is just a waste of time. The statistic was that, I forget, but it was really compelling. It was something like half, or maybe more than half, I think it was half of the animals that we obtain come from people that we know. And, or maybe it was even the majority. I forgot what the statistic was. But I was like, whoa, like, wait a minute. That's just like, whoa. And then I thought about it and I was like, well, yeah, that's what happened to me. Timber and Joey, I adopted from a friend. And Lucy, yeah, she came from a shelter, but she was from a friend. And I just was like, wow, that's so weird. Like, what are we doing? And now I'm forgetting how I made that math of like, there's no reason for me to write this book now. But at the time it felt very dramatic. How do we sway public opinion? I don't know. I mean, I can't believe it's still a problem. I think really and truly, and I talk about some of the things that cause people to not want to go to a shelter. I think for starters, there's a bunch of fears. One of them is like, I don't want to go into a shelter. I don't know what I'm going to see. It's going to be terribly sad and upsetting. And I don't want to leave there like remembering what I saw, being horrified by what I saw, especially if I'm only going to be able to take one dog and leave the other 100 behind. Or if I leave without any dogs, I'm going to be devastated. So I think that, you know, being willing to just say, yeah, it might be hard. It's going to be really hard to go into a shelter. But that willingness to just be scared, be uncomfortable. I think social media really is the answer to all of our problems these days. I really think with Facebook and Twitter, like, it's great that you're taking pictures of like your meal or like a picture of yourself when you have like pink lipstick on. Like, that's great. But another great thing to do is like showing pictures of dead dogs and cats that have been euthanized, like seeing a pile of dead dogs and cats or sharing videos on Facebook pages. Yeah, some of your friends and family are going to be like, ugh, that's so depressing. Why are you doing that? I'm going to unfriend you. Okay. Other people may say, oh my gosh, I really had no idea. I'll never buy another dog again. I'm going to only rescue from here on out. So I think we have to get creative. And I think that's, it's one of the reasons I love PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I think they're really creative. I know that they're not for everybody. And I know some people are sometimes offended by what they do, but I think they're really smart in that they know people don't want to look at pictures of dead dogs and cats, but they'll find clever and smart ways to get people in to look at these things, and then they'll hide the dead dogs and cats pictures further in, like a minute later. So I'd say just get creative, keep trying, keep educating. I wish there was like one button that we could press and do away with this problem and all the other ones, but I think, you know, I think it has to just come from a many-pronged approach, the spaying and neutering thing, adopting and not purchasing, and then spreading the word. Oh, one more and then we'll wrap it up. Yes. Wow. Okay, so I'm going to just share this with the podcasters. Anne from Vegan Life Colorado has said that she has had vegan cats for many years. One of her cats just died at the age of 19, and he was vegan for 10 years. So if you want to get in touch with Anne from Vegan Life Colorado, by all means, please do. And she can tell you how to veganize your cat safely. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.